everyone. Welcome to the World Bank EdTech Podcast. Today we're talking about assessments and how assessments have been adapted to remote education settings and lessons we can learn from these experiences for education after the pandemic. Our World Bank EdTech team member, Senior Education Technology Specialist Cristobal Cobo, is speaking with World Bank colleagues, Senior Education Specialist Karthika Radhakrishnan, Education Specialist Diego Armando Luna Bazaldúa, and Consultant Aishwarya Karana. You can find related blogs and materials in our episode notes.
Welcome to the World Bank EdTech Podcast, a conversation in the use of technology and innovation in education globally. My name is Cristobal Cobo. I'm a senior education technology specialist at the World Bank, and we are very pleased to have with us today my colleagues, Karthika Radhakrishnan, senior education specialist directly from Nepal, Diego Armando Luna Bazaldúa, education specialist from the World Bank as well, and Aishwarya Karana, World Bank consultant. To all of you, welcome to our program today. We are facing challenging times. The pandemic has not only disrupted education globally, but has also exacerbated pre-existing inequalities. On the other hand, COVID has also been a time for experimentation and innovation. Today, we will talk about assessment and how it has been reimagined and transformed for remote education settings. We will especially focus on what lessons can we learn from these experiences for education after the pandemic. Let me start with my colleague, Diego. Why don't you help us to have a quick introduction? How technology can really help us to apply assessment remotely, and what would be the benefits of that?
Thank you very much, Cristobal. So for those of you that don't know me, this is my first time in the podcast. My name is Diego Luna Bazaldúa.
Welcome.
Thank you. And I'm an education specialist in the World Bank, particularly working on aspects related to psychometrics, assessment, whether this is learning assessment or assessments in early childhood development. Those are areas that I'm really passionate about. I really like to work on that, and I'm very happy to be here with you today. So, Cristobal, before we start to talk about your questions that are more related to technology, I would like first to spend a couple of minutes to talk about what is learning assessment and how we understand it. Would that be okay?
Absolutely. Yeah?
Perfect. Awesome. So I know that you, for instance, have been exposed to a lot of learning assessments throughout your life. So I want you to tell me, what do you think when you think about a learning assessment? Cristobal, tell me in two words.
Exams. What I have in. Yeah.
What about you?
Because most of the exams are pretty high stakes. They determine where your life would go.
Absolutely.
You fail one exam and they are...
And you are in troubles.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay, so let me give you first, before we dive into this technology and assessment aspect, just to give you an overview of how we think about learning assessment, and particularly with some very theoretical frameworks and classifications that we use in the World Bank. First and foremost, let me tell you that learning assessment, we think about it not in terms of exams or exams that have high stakes consequences for people, but more broadly, we think about them as activities that will allow us to know what students know, understand, and can do, and from there, make informed decisions about next steps in the educational process. Why do we try to move away from that kind of everyday common idea of an assessment being an exam? Because there are a lot of activities on the everyday life that are assessments, but they don't feel like a learning assessment. One example could be even just an oral question to your colleagues, and from there giving them some feedback or just clarifying some terms or some procedures or some actions to take. That could be technically a very informal assessment, and it's allowing you to understand what they know and can do, right? There are other assessments that countries and international organizations carry out just to understand performance levels within countries and between countries. And those don't carry out these high-stakes decisions, but they allow to understand if an education system is delivering as expected. Regarding to your question, Cristobal, I can tell you that in terms of technology, there are many ways in which technology can be embedded into the assessment process. In terms of the pandemic, Cristobal, I think that, how can I say this? Technology has always been there, but it's now being bolstered as a way to do remote delivery of assessments. Mm-hmm. But it has always been there. Think about that, those technologies that were able to read standardized questions. I don't know if you remember these marker questions that you had to fill with a pencil.
Fill the bubbles, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. That has been there since the 50s and 60s, and that came as a revolution of technology and assessment a long time ago, right? You may remember these guys from when you had to take some tests or exams when you were in high school or entering college. But from there, I think technology has expanded the possibilities and options for assessment.
There's TOEFL, there's GRE, all of these assessments that have existed and have been using technology for a long time.
Right. That is true, Aish. That is totally true. And even now, I don't know if you have had the chance to take the GRE or the TOEFL, these high stakes exams. Nowadays, they are very interactive. You can take them online. You can take them now, even as a response to COVID, you can take them at home. And that is how technology is playing a game here. In terms of the response of the COVID pandemic, I think all these assessments, whether these are formative assessments that are administered commonly in the classroom, high-stakes examinations like TOEFL and GRE that you mentioned, Aish, or international assessments like PIRS, TIMSS, and PISA, they are all moving from an in-person administration to a remote administration. And I think that is what is making the difference, and that will drive a lot of decisions for countries moving forward about assessment administration. And for the sake of the topic that we are here today, I think it's important to think about how simple, small technologies that we use every day for SMS, for texting, for calling our friends and family now can be used as a tool for assessment administration, in this case, phones. Whereas assessment specialists in the past used to use computers and more recently tablets for assessment administration, I think now we're moving towards the use of phones, because these small tools or the small technology appliances are now at a level of development and at a level of technological advancement that are basically small computers and can allow you to do all kinds of activities over the phone.
Yeah, also mobile phones are more commonly available than laptops.
Exactly. And I'm thinking about phones, just that today in the morning, I was able to see the wide variety of phones available at different prices in the market. So you have plenty of options out there, even for low resource environments. You have options of different phones that you could use and select from if you want to use them for learning activities, including assessment. How can assessments play a role here, Cristobal? They can have a role for the delivery of learning contents, the delivery of assessments through phone calls, through SMS messages, through specific apps like Duolingo, WhatsApp, learning management systems, but also for proctoring students. So for instance, in the case of high stakes examinations, now you can take them at home with no problem. But when you open the app or you open the online resource to taking an exam at home, there is going to be a proctoring process in it. So somebody is going to be monitoring your behavior just to prevent you cheating or having some kind of test malpractice while you're taking the exam at home.
Initially, when schools were open, probably we did not feel the need to use technology as much. But over the course of last 1.5 years since the onset of the pandemic, we see more examples coming in from countries where technologies have been used to assess students. They use various kinds of technologies, using TV, using radio, using SMS, phone calls, IVR system to either deliver the content or to assess the students.
Thank you, Aish.
This is essential to underscore. I mean, we have been focalized, and I think it's understandable, on the learning loss, on the challenges ahead, on the things haven't done as we planned, how the inequalities has been expanded, as we said at the beginning. But at the same time, this has been such a prolific time for exploration, for pushing the boundaries, for testing things that were not explored before the pandemic. So we do also foresee that there is, as we used to call, a garden of innovation that is about to bloom in the months and years to come because of the pandemic.
Right.
I totally agree with you, Cristobal. And on this idea, I think that countries, policymakers, international development organizations, they have to think about assessments and assessments delivered over the phone as one more tool that can help to build resilience in education systems moving forward, right? This is not going to be the last time that we face a national or international crisis that interrupts in-person education. So we have to think about how the lessons learned from the pandemic and the lessons learned from the use of technology in a creative way can be something that we can scale up and continue using as a response to future emergencies and crises.
Thank you so much, Diego, for giving us the whole framework and a better understanding of the key concepts. Now let's move into understanding how can these approaches benefit a large sector of the population. We all know that an extremely large sector of the population don't have internet access, or at least don't have regular internet access. So I was wondering, Ashwarya, if you can share with us what remote assessment experiences can be considered for those contexts in which there's no access to connectivity, or at least there's no regular access to connectivity that you think are important for the audience to listen.
Yeah, thank you so much, Christopher. It's pretty similar to what Diego said about technologies, that technologies existed for a long time. It's not just something new that came up. It's same for remote assessments. They have been existing even before the pandemic, but they've gained popularity over the course of last 1.5 years. And some of the examples come in from rural Afghanistan, Pakistan, Niger, where we see the initial examples focused more on adult education and followed a more hybrid model. That is, in the beginning of the project, the participants will meet in person for certain hours each week, receive instruction and get oriented with the program. And this was followed by sending a text message to them to assess what they learned. And sometimes these programs would also have a monthly exam conducted at a learning center to track the development of the participant and see their retention rate. But since the onset of the pandemic, we see more examples coming in from all over the world. We see Ecuador, Ghana, Sierra Leone, which conducted assessments using phone calls. We see Guatemala that used IVR technology. We see Botswana and India that used phone calls and SMS. In Zambia, we see SMS, IVR, phone calls, all of them used together. And many other countries which use radios and TVs to also assess the children or at least deliver the content to them. But yes, of course, the low connectivity or no connectivity pose a great challenge to smooth implementation of such programs and assessments, because sometimes it's hard to reach parents or child because the connection simply does not exist, or you're unable to deliver the messages to them or the learning content. So what we observe in such situations and looking at previous experiences of various implementation partners, there are ways to overcome this challenge. One way is collaborating with the local mobile service provider. And this was common in both Afghanistan and Pakistan, where you provide in return free mobile phones, SIM cards, and free message service during the course of the project to the participants, which somehow overcomes the connectivity issue. Then there is also a way where you can reach out participants multiple times. So not just calling them once, but calling them two or three times to make sure you reach them at a time where they're available. Another way is just before disconnecting the call, each time enumerator checks with the participant whether this is the right number, best number to call and the best time to call you next time. If not, adjust the time or the phone number. And one thing we also observed was collecting the phone numbers of close friends or relatives can be really helpful. If, say, for example, I'm an enumerator, I'm unable to reach the parent, I can maybe call the close relative or a friend and check what's happening, and maybe they can help me connect to the child. So these are all creative solutions that can be implemented. Of course, they'll have some cost implications, but these are ways you can still continue assessing child.
That's great. You really diversify the number of options, and I really appreciate you for sharing your experience. Thanks for that.
You know, as Aishwarya was talking, Cristobal, another set of examples related to assessments and service on early childhood development that have been also administered over the phone came to my mind. I can talk about a couple of examples. One of them being in Guatemala, where our colleagues were also trying to get a sense of how early childhood development was happening during the pandemic. And for that, they were administering to caregivers some questions that are trying to get a sense of how children are developing in different domains, such as language, numerical ability, social emotional ability, during the pandemic. And they were able to collect very interesting results showing that, of course, children are still developing, but they are also having some challenges due to the closure of childcare centers. And another one that I find very, very interesting, and it was something that was reproduced at scale, is something that happened in your own country, Cristobal, in Chile, where the government, the National Assessment Agency, created these diagnostic assessment tools for literacy, numeracy, and social-emotional status of children. And not only they provided all the technology, they provided all the resources in a digital package to teachers and schools, mm-hmm. but they also allowed teachers to coordinate with parents to do the administration of these assessments at home in coordination with the teachers. So in this setting, if parents were in low resource environments, they could have a phone call with the teacher and the teacher would help them to administer the assessments to the child in person. And from there, the parents would give feedback, would give the results to the teacher, and the teacher would provide them with some feedback on where the children were and how to best support them to continue their learning process at home. So I think that those are very interesting experiences that also show how these remote assessments can happen when there is no connectivity or limited access.
Indeed, indeed, Diego. Thank you so much for sharing those insights, and we can learn from different countries of the world who are tackling similar problems. Thank you for that.
Now, I think I would invite Kartika, who's been working in Nepal along the similar assessments, and can share her experience in the country.
Thanks. Thanks, Aishwarya. Hello, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. My name is Kartika Radhakrishnan, Senior Education Specialist with the World Bank based in Kathmandu. So really happy to share our experience from Nepal. So in Nepal, schools shut down in March 2020, just like the rest of the world due to the pandemic. And the government of Nepal launched a multimodal learning platform to ensure that all children can continue to learn during school closures. So, however, we noticed that the uptake of these programs was low, and this was for two reasons. One is the access to some of the platforms, especially children coming from disadvantaged backgrounds did not have access to these platforms. And second, there was a missing student-teacher interaction. And that is when we heard about the experience from Botswana. And we wanted, using mobile phones, and we wanted to understand whether a similar intervention like that would be effective in Nepal. So we recently completed a pilot to support foundational numeracy using mobile phones. And this is cross-country learning experience. The pilot involved, just like in Botswana, the pilot involved SMS messages and phone calls to support foundational skills in math among grade 3 to 5 students in community schools. And the phone-based assessment was an integral part of this intervention. So a short math test was administered over the phone, like 5 questions, which included addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division questions, along with a few other questions to understand how children were learning during the school closures or whether they were enrolled in the schools, etc. So the test basically was based on the ESSER or the Pratham model, and it was adapted for phone delivery. And we have now completed 3 rounds of assessments, right, successfully. And the end line results should be out soon as well.
That's great. And Kartika, since you are sharing your country experience, if policymakers would like to follow and learn from your experience, what would you say are the critical components, or sometimes we call them enabling conditions, to make an effective remote assessment into practice? What will be the advice that you give to policymakers?
Thanks, Cristobal. So based on our experience, I would suggest 3 enabling conditions, right, for the success, which are critical. First, access to mobile phones and network, right? And our colleagues in this podcast have already mentioned about this, right? So we knew that accessibility to mobile phones is high. So nearly 85% of households have access to mobile phones. Also, you know, in order to participate in these phone-based assessments, one does not require a smartphone. Just because these assessments are delivered over a phone call, just a basic mobile phone is sufficient. And what we also had to ensure is that cost for households to participate in the assessment is fully covered. So that's the first point. The second, it is important to contextualize the content, right? The assessment content was contextualized for Nepal to ensure consistency with the Nepali curriculum. For example, as per the Nepali curriculum, a child in grade 3 should be able to perform a simple 2-digit by 1-digit division problem. And in addition to these, I think a couple of other factors that are really important is like ensuring using simple instruction for parents and students and keeping the assessment brief. So for this, providing practical training to assessors on how to conduct assessments over phone is extremely important. And just before, you know, our colleagues were talking about the reliability, Diego was mentioning about the reliability and whether these assessments can be compared. So this was really in our mind as well when we were doing the phone-based assessments in Nepal, whether or not these assessments would be reliable. So what we have done is we have included back checks as part of these assessments. So a small share of back checks have been included, and it will be really interesting to see the results from this. Training is an integral part, right? So assessors or enumerators, basically, who are going to be testing the students, need to be trained appropriately. So they need to inform parents how the assessment will be carried out and you know, provide the required guidance upfront, as well as keep this brief. So this is very important. Third, I think using effective strategies to ensure that households respond to phone calls. And this is critical. So here, support from head teachers and local governments would ensure that households are aware about these assessments and they respond to the phone calls. So we all sometimes get these scam calls. And so information in regard to these assessments, if they are provided to the households upfront, would greatly help in ensuring that they're responding to the phone calls. So these are the three enabling conditions, I think, that are really important to consider.
This is great.
To Karthika's point, I also think for more multilingual concepts, the language of assessment is another area that policymakers or the implementing firms need to consider, because in a country like India, where there are many languages, it might be hard to select only one language. And also with regional languages, sometimes the challenge is when you're implementing assessments using SMS, there's a 160 character limit. So people, everybody, policymakers, enumerators, and implementing firms, they need to be aware of these things and keep that in mind before designing the assessment and the instruments. And it might be required that in some cases we saw, because of the character limit, the firms had to send multiple SMSs. So a question that you can maybe send in one SMS needs three SMS in a different language.
That's absolutely right, Aishwarya. I think piloting, once we have the content ready, piloting that is also important to ensure that the SMSs are being delivered in appropriate or correctly. So that's really important to, one, ensure that we pilot it. And also on the content, one point that I also wanted to mention that, yes, language aligning with the curriculum are all important, but also using phrases that children in, for example, in Nepal would understand, right, is also critical. So content needs to be contextualized.
Right.
Awesome. This is super helpful. We have mentioned problems with access, adaptation to the context, to the language, to the length that the phone or the SMS can allow. I wanted to ask finally to Karthika, but also my colleagues, feel free to jump in afterwards. Do you foresee any challenge for a larger adoption of phone-based assessment for the future?
Thanks, Christabel. So here, I think one challenge, right? I mean, this is not a challenge if we are able to plan it well. So timing of the call is really important, right? And this requires careful planning. It may require a few attempts to schedule these calls, right? And as I mentioned, support, and here support from head teachers and local governments would greatly help in informing households about these assessments. So in Nepal, we conducted these assessments both during the school closures and when the schools had reopened after the lockdown. And what we noticed was that households usually have only one phone, and the availability of the parent or caregiver with the child requires, you know, planning. And we noticed that it was easier to reach parents or caregivers during the lockdown because they were at home, right? Versus when the schools had reopened post the lockdown. So just to be scheduling the phone calls is important and sometimes will take a few attempts to do this. Second, from our experience in Nepal, we know that these assessments are cost effective, right? However, it may be even cheaper in countries where mobile SMS or call costs are lower due to market competition. So governments can partner with telecom companies to subsidize the cost or agree with telecom companies that mobile service providers do not charge for these calls. And I think this would be really important for any scale up, right? So yeah, I'll stop here with these two points. Thank you.
And adding to Karthika's points, I think it's also important to understand that phone-based assessments take time to administer. Even if you plan that the call will take probably 15 minutes, might take even longer because of connectivity issues. Sometimes enumerators call the parents midway the call ends, so they need to call them again. So that's why it's really important that the assessment instrument is really short and simple and really specific. So these are the three things that need to be followed, like short, specific, and simple. So even if the call is disconnected, you can quickly recall them again and start the assessment from where you stopped. So that's one thing to be kept in mind. And also Arthika's point on competition among the mobile service providers, which definitely brings the cost down. Another thing is involving local mobile service, so they can provide some kind of SMS credit or phone credits during the duration of the program, something that happened in Afghanistan and Pakistan, and not just these two countries, but we see this happening in multiple countries and over the span of last year. One more thing that I would like to mention is the impersonal nature of phone-based assessments, because sometimes when you're calling, conducting these SMSs through SMS or IVR technologies or phone calls, you're not able to see the child or develop that personal relationship with them as you do in the classroom. So sometimes having a previously established contact with parents or caregivers can be really helpful, or maybe involving teachers. So the message comes from teachers saying, these are our local partners who will be conducting the assessments with you. So there's an element of trust that's developed and some personal connection, because sometimes having a completely impersonal nature might also affect the take up of the study.
Great points.
So something else on these points that we are discussing, Cristobal, that I think would be important for people to keep in mind is the actual cost per child. Among the resources and lessons learned from the implementation of phone-based assessments in Botswana, the researchers there did a calculation, one of these economics calculation of how much did it cost per child to carry out this intervention, this learning intervention over the phone and do the administration of assessments over the phone. And it was actually quite cost effective. It was just $4.40 per child, and they were able to reach out to more than 2,000 households with the funding available at that time. So if we're thinking about that, something that's cost effective, it sounds like as one of the different strategies to promote learning continuity, phone-based assessments can be one option out there for countries.
That's fantastic. So we have shared so much experience. We have the three brains of you guys sharing all what you know about assessment, remote assessment, the things that we have to consider. So I'm sure our audience will love to go into deeper details. So I will ask the three of you if you would like to share any documentation, any publication, any source of consultation that can be of interest for people to deep dive in more detail or with a specific experience. Any information that you can share would be super welcome.
There is one article by Noam Angrist on lessons learned from mobile phone assessment implementation. It's a very easy to read article. It's publicly available online on his website and among the different experiences that he has from Botswana. I would recommend the lay reader to take a look at it. Probably somebody with a general sense and understanding of economics will be able to read this article. And in that article, I think makes a really good description of the lessons learned, what were the challenges of implementation in Botswana, and what are some considerations for future expansion of this kind of mobile or phone-based assessments.
Our policy brief on remote learning has just been released, so I would suggest to have a look at that. It provides information on how the intervention helped to improve learning. These are results from our midline survey, and we would be also having the results from the endline survey soon.
One thing that I would like to mention is there is a document prepared by Pratham. It's called the Guide for Creating SMS-Based Educational Content SMS. It basically tells you how to create learning content in 160 characters for the SMS. So that could be one important resource for people who are exploring SMS-based assessments. And also recently, World Bank, the learning assessment platform team, prepared a blog. Diego, do you want to tell about the blog?
Sure. May 11 of 2021, our team put together a blog on implementing phone-based formative assessments. So it's publicly available in the series of World Bank, and you can find it if you look by my name or the name of my colleagues, Julia Lieberman and Victoria Levin. It was published on May 11, and the title is Assessing Outside of a Classroom Box While Schools Are Closed, and the Role of Formative Assessments Administered over the Phone.
All right, this is awesome. And I will try to collect some of these resources. I will ask you to send them to us, and we will see if we can add some of these resources into the description and presentation of this blog for people to have plenty of materials to go and dive in. Thank you so much to all of you for sharing these resources, this country experience, these concepts, this frontier knowledge that we are discovering and consolidating in terms of remote assessment. I think this will be for extreme importance and relevance for countries. So thank you for joining our podcast, and we look forward to keep this conversation in the future.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure.
Thank you.